order. May we please have attendance taken to determine a quorum?
Sure. Good morning, committee members. Today's Friday, September 8th. If I call your name, please state you're here. Michelle Maloney.
Here.
Mr. Ivan Perone.
Here.
Mr. Ian Thomas.
Here.
Mr. Dane Sheldon. Dane, are you on the phone? No. Mr. Henry Robinson.
Here.
And our chair, Mr. Ray Monteleone.
Here.
And we have some guests in the room.
First, can you determine if we have a quorum for
we
me?
We do have a quorum, yes, sir.
Thank you. We meet all the requirements of chair, vice chair in person, two staff, and two community.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Okay. Now, could we please have our invited guests first introduce themselves so you record it into the record?
Okay. My name is Richard Pengelly with PFM Asset Management.
My name is Mara Lugo, and I'm with PFM Financial Advisors.
And any other guests? First, staff of the school district.
My name is Todd Chelibashki, Treasury Manager for the district.
Any members of our community, not employees of the district? There's none now.
We have Laura on the phone. I don't know if she can hear.
Oh, sorry. Laura, could you introduce yourself?
Not yet. I wanted to make sure you got through the room. Laura Howe with PFM Financial Advisors. And Kirsten is actually on the line as well. She's one of our analysts. It's Kirsten, if you want to say hello and introduce yourself for the record.
Hello, I'm Kirsten Patterson from PFM Financial Advisors.
Very good. Thank you for that. And if any members of the community at large arrive, please flag me and let me know so I can announce their arrival and let them understand how it operates during their participation. Okay. With that, we welcome everybody, and I initially apologize for the need for the postponement. Most of you know, if not all of you know, that my trusted associate, Patricia Loomis, who's worked as hard on this committee as I have, that's on there, passed away. It's now going to be 4 weeks ago, and it's put my life in disarray, to say the least. So it never even showed up on my calendar when it was supposed to. So I appreciate all your jumping through hoops to make this happen and have a quorum, and especially our invited guests. I thank you, and I'm indebted for that. With that, let's talk about approval of the prior meeting minutes. Would someone like to motion, and I believe it is fine unless there's questions, that we do all three in one motion?
I move approval of all three, approval of the prior evaluations.
Meeting minutes?
Meeting minutes, yes.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
Any discussion? Questions? Being none, I'll call the question. All indicate in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes unanimously. Okay, we're now in old business, and we're going to have investment advisor and financial advisor reports coming up. Because the names are so similar, as we've talked about before, because of the spin-off and acquisition that has taken place, I did get some questions for some people, not in the meeting, but trying to understand what we do in this committee and so on, that if you could spend about 120 seconds to 180 seconds on whichever you are, who owns you, your contract with us, and that way everybody kind of parses what's going on and kind of like what you handle. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So we will first start out with the asset management PFM.
Sure. Thank you. chair of committee. I'm Richard Pengali with PFM Asset Management. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of U.S. Bank Asset Management, which is part of U.S. Bank. At the end of 2021, we're split from our colleagues here at PFM Financial Advisors, and we were both before part of the PFM group, owned by the PFM group, which is owned by the partners. We have been working with the school district for quite some time. We provide investment management services for the longer term investments in the portfolio. Currently, that's two separate portfolios. One has a 1-3 year benchmark, the other one has a 1-5 year benchmark. And I kind of give you that detail because we're going to talk a little bit about some of the discussions that we've been having with staff regarding the structure.
And if I could, just as a point, I don't believe it's a conflict, but U.S. Bank does own the note on my boat. So I just want to make that clear. And they haven't done a thing to help me with it, so there's definitely no problems going on here. Continue.
Sure. So with that, I'll jump into a brief update on the market. We're focused on the quarter ending 6/30, which was a big shift from sort of our thinking or the market's thinking at the end of the first calendar quarter. If you recall, at the end of March, we had just experienced a wobble in the mid-sized bank and small-sized bank market. The expectation was that there was going to be significant tightening in credit. That's going to have a big impact on the market generally and on the economy. Rates have been trending down. The outlook for rates over the next couple of years had shifted sort of to the bottom of the range that we'd seen going back, let's say, the prior 3 to 5 months. Fast forward to the end of this quarter, and we've sort of seen a flip. As we'll talk about in a second here, there was a lot of risk-off thinking. We saw yield spreads on credit instruments widen out as investors were sort of reassessing what risks look like in the investment markets. Fast forward to the end of this past quarter, spreads tightened in credit market as kind of the view was that things were going to be okay. We weathered the credit crisis. There was also the looming debt ceiling standoff, which was on the radar out there for June. Fast forward, and that was also resolved or the can kicked down the road, however you want to kind of think about that. But again, sort of playing into kind of the market's view and outlook in a positive way. The expectation was that we would see a recession sometime in the second half of this year, and that expectation was also shifted out. And now market participants who think there's going to be a recession, if they think there's going to be one, are thinking about that happening sometime in 2024. So a really big shift over the course of the quarter.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hear similar observations as you've had now. But yet, as I talk to business people, especially in Florida now, which is one of the boom states, people are watching who they hire, how they hire, and they're physically tightening up. So the committee needs to understand there's a difference between what the economists call a recession, and I'll call it a slowdown that is actually impacting the economy.
Yeah,
whether that's sale of houses, whether that's hiring people and so on like that. And do you have any sort of insights for us about Florida and our area at all?
You probably have more insights than I have. I mean, that's our general kind of baseline view, is that we'll see a slowdown, but not necessarily a recession, right? So even folks are calling for recession next year. Our kind of firm and bank view is that it's going to be a slowdown, just like you described. The labor market is not, you know, quite as friendly to, you know, the labor side. There isn't quite as much demand as there was before, and that's largely through a lot of those job openings sort of being taken down now. Couple that with all the savings that had built up, supposedly, you know, following stimulus programs, consumers are now running through that. So we saw an uptick in the labor force participation rate recently, which actually increased the unemployment rate. So we're starting to see conditions all around slow down just the way that you described, both in the labor market and in business activity. The consumer really has continued to be strong through all of this. Despite the high inflation, folks are still hitting the buy button. They're still taking advantage of services. But, and actually there's a chart in here that kind of shows that pretty well. Page, for those on the phone, page 8. We talked about this all through last year, at the beginning of this year, that consumers, when, you know, the lockdowns happened, you know, have really been focused on buying equipment. Everyone needed to sort of reconfigure their houses with, you know, furniture or desks. They need to get maybe additional computer equipment, webcams, things like that. As things opened up, the pent-up demand for getting out and being with people, we saw people heading back out. So, you know, food services, bars, restaurants. And then generally, as the economy opened up and life started getting back to some kind of normal, service component really expanded. But what you see here in 2023 is that even though there's more spending, consumer spending in services relative to goods, so the services are the blue, and the services are yellow, and the goods are the blue, there's a declining spend on the services. Now that I've taken 8 vacations and paid 3 times the price for them, there isn't quite as much money to get out and do that. I've sort of done all of those things now, and so there's a deceleration in that spend, and which is exactly what you were referring to. So I'll sort of jump back to the prior page. You know, we've been talking a lot about inflation. We learned, you know, everything about all kinds of inflation over, you know, the past 18 months here. Inflation has continued to trend in the right direction. You know, headline inflation, here we're showing the PCE, which is the Fed's preferred, you know, measure of inflation, the personal consumption expenditure, is down to, I think the latest reading was 3.3%. We're showing 3.8% here from May. So significantly lower than the 7 or 8% that we saw kind of at the peak. If you look at the headline inflation, CPI, which is one that's usually reported in the papers, you know, that peaked at 9, you know, above 9%, and we're also down in the 3s on that. But the Fed is really focused on kind of the baseline numbers. So they look at core and even super core. And I think we've talked about super core before. Core is where you strip out food and energy, which are volatile. So they always strip that out because they change from year to year. But they're really trying to get at what the overall kind of pricing, baseline pricing looks like. And then more recently, they've also been stripping out shelter as another component to really try and assess what that baseline is. And the super core inflation kind of has been moving sideways. Right, so it's been trending down, but moving sideways, and still has a 4 handle on it, well above the 2% target that the Fed has. So that's sort of the challenge that they have, and why we haven't seen them really start to ramp down rates, and why at each meeting, kind of each communication, they always leave kind of rate hikes on the table. Is that they really want to be convinced that there's going to be movement in that baseline back towards their target.
Well, what's the logic with a slowdown or potential recession to even talk about raising interest rates again, especially at the levels we are now? I don't understand, and they don't say it, what the logic is.
Well, it's that number, right? So the 4.7% on the super core is not 2%. So yes, they made some progress on it, but again, that number keeps moving sideways. You can even see it here, kind of in the main numbers. You know, even if we add on the past couple months from here, it's still been kind of hovering around that 4.5%.
No, what I'm getting at is, sure, it's not 2. But the bottom line is, can't you live with 4 without impacting the potential for growth in the economy that interest rate hikes do?
That's a question that's out there too, right? In the form of, is 2 the right number, or is this economy capable of generating more growth, and we really should have a higher level of inflation?
So when Carter was president, they would have loved 4%. Right? I mean, that's the reality of it.
Right. Correct, yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm not an economist, right?
No, I'm saying, I'm just...
But I think even when they look at their models, they think that this really is an economy that should be at 2%, right? And it's actually reflected in their projections, right? So, on page 10, this is... what their long-term world is, right? And what's that based on? Assessments of what the population growth looks like, what the age demographics of the the U.S. population looks like, the industries we have, etc. Their long-term view is that this is a 2% economy. Right, 1.8%, 2%, that's the growth potential of this economy. So if that's where you think the fundamentals are, that doesn't necessarily support a 4% type of inflation rate. So that's probably, what the thinking is. I don't know if there's some model or management theory that says, keep it at 3% as your target, or 3.5% for some period of time, and then step it down. But right now, their view is that they need to get it down to 2%.
And the reality of it is, no matter what I think or logic it is or that, if the investment world is buying it, that's what they're going to do, that's what's going to impact our investments.
For sure, yes. Yeah.
So we're reacting to a bunch of economists' perception and then the perception of the investment community on relying on that perception.
Yes, absolutely.
It's getting a lot closer to going to the racetrack on Allendale at the Gulfstream and picking out the horse that we got to have. In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Okay. Continue. Keep going. You're doing great.
Speaking of GDP, because we're on kind of GDP here, GDP since these last estimates, where the Fed had raised their estimates on 2023 GDP to 1% for the full year, it's looking now like it's probably going to be page 10. It's now looking like it's going to be more like 2% for the year. And the current, if you look at GDP now, the Atlanta Fed puts out sort of a nowcast of GDP. I think when I last looked at it, it was something like 5.6% projection for GDP for this quarter, right? Which is very different than these projections here. So. Kind of going back to our earlier kind of comments, right now we're in a period where the economy is very strong, being held up by this consumer who's been very, very resilient, but the expectation is some slowing over time. So on page 11, next page, talking about markets and how they're reacting to all of this. The curve continues to be inverted. It's less inverted than it was at times earlier in the year. After there was this reassessment that, unlikely that we go into recession this year, Intermediate yields rose, longer-term yields rose, as there's a general expectation that we're going to be at these levels for a longer time. And these levels meaning the Fed funds rate in the 5.25%, 5.5% range. But the curve is still inverted, so there is still an expectation that the economy is going to do that. So page, kind of going backwards, page 9, we went back and sort of charted the sort of peaks, tightening peaks over the past tightening cycles, and looked at how long the Fed stayed there before they started cutting rates again. And then on average, going back into the 90s, it was 8 months that rates stayed at that level, which would be, you know, a fantastic outcome for your investment portfolio, right? Staying in these, you know, 5+% levels that we haven't seen in, you know, 15 years would be great for your investment earnings. So how long does the Fed think they're going to stay here? Kind of going back to page 8. Their last projection showed that they would have, based on where they are now, one more rate hike before the end of the year, and a quarter point hike before the end of the year. And then after that, interest rates would start to trail off. At the next meeting, we'll get another update on the dot plot, so we'll see how that assessment you know, changes when that happens. But at this point, the market's expectation is that at this upcoming meeting, they're going to pause. The data is mixed enough that they don't necessarily have to go this meeting, but there's a 40% likelihood at this point, if you look at the Fed Fund futures market, they will do another quarter basis point hike before the end of the year in line with this expectation. So I mentioned, if you jump to page 13, and look at the corporate spreads on the top right-hand side. So you see that there was a, you know, big spike in March, tied around what was going on in the banking market with SVB, First Republic, Credit Suisse. That blew out corporate spreads. And then as those, you know, issues sort of resolved themselves, we saw that that fear and concern sort of pull back. And your portfolio benefited from having corporate instruments that we purchased during that period of time, and having those spreads tighten that contributed to a gain in market value for those securities relative to treasuries. Page 15 shows general returns across the different sectors for the quarter and 1 to 3 year space. Generally, credit did well relative to the treasuries. So as rates rose over the quarter, the credit instruments tightening spreads counteracted that, and they actually gained in return and contributed to positive performance in those sectors. And then on page 16, sort of the same thing for the 1 to 5 year part of the curve. Again, you see that credit was a positive contributor to performance despite the rising rates. Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of flow into talking about the portfolios. So page 22 and 23 just show the portfolio allocations versus your policy and the maturities versus the policy requirements, and everything was in line with the policy. I did mention that we've had a number of or a few conversations with Ivan and staff What we hope to do is come back to you with a little more reporting on the overall portfolio, which will allow us to talk a little bit more about both the internal and external portfolios together, so to give you a little more insight.
Practically speaking, how fast, I'll rephrase it, how much earlier than our meetings can you get this out to us?
Actually, I'm not sure how quickly do we usually have to, you know, have to go and check. I think it's before, right?
Yeah, like a week.
Yeah.
That's what I'm used to, is a week.
Okay.
And no way to get that a little faster? I read a lot of these, and it does take me time. I can imagine some of our other folks that aren't as used to going through these.
Okay.
That's on there.
Okay, yeah, we'll look into that. So as I mentioned, we'll begin providing a little more detail. We're still working through what that's going to look like, but more to come on that. Page 26 shows a snapshot of the portfolio, the 1 to 3 year portfolio. This is the larger of the two. One thing I want to highlight is that, given that there's less risk on the upside in terms of rates going up at this point, we have moved durations to neutral. Compared to where we were before, we're at 90 to 95% of the benchmark. So now that we have less exposure to rising interest rates, we want to be neutral to the benchmark.
Have we ever done a comparison of if we didn't do any trades and just held on to what we had versus trading to benefit from whatever market predictions we have? Has there ever been any historical analysis of what that's looked like?
So the challenge of not doing any trading is that because these are fixed income securities, they change. So you're going to fall out of line with the benchmark if you don't do some trading, right? So each month the benchmark resets. What was a 1 year, 1 month, is now 1 year. And what was a 1 year is now an 11 months. So you have to sell that. It's been kicked out of the benchmark, and then new securities move in. So some trading has to happen.
I understand that to meet the benchmarks.
Right.
And I was trying to come up in my head with some process that gives us ammo for evaluating the benchmark. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, had we not traded, the result would have been X. This is what we did to meet benchmarks. Result is Y. If the delta is a positive delta, you keep the same benchmarks. If it's a negative delta, do we need to rethink the benchmarks? That's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to give us something. You know, to you guys, the benchmarks mean a lot. To us, the benchmarks, what does it really mean? We're trying to balance, we're trying to reduce risk, trying to maximize yield, all these other things. It's much more nebulous to us. So I was just, thinking about it.
Yes. So we actually have been discussing that, right? So one thing that we did look at and talk about is, was the 1 to 3 the right benchmark? Is the 1 to 5 the one right benchmark? And I think where we settled on, particularly given the experience of the past year, is that a 0 to 5 benchmark might actually make more sense and actually does permit more of a hold strategy in a rising rate environment, because you aren't forced to sell when securities hit that 1 year mark. You are allowed to let securities get closer to it.
And that's what my thinking, I'm trying to just, to committee, I'm not the only one thinking this. Does this make sense to you guys, of trying to get that kind of information and understand it?
Yes, that's yeah.
And we can share, we happen, we actually presented some of that information to Ivan and Todd. We're happy to share kind of what that analysis
at the next meeting, Ivan, why don't you also try to give us the world according to Ivan, what Ivan thinks. I got a few minutes of that. Is that doable?
Of course. I hope you want to hear me.
Well, we wouldn't ask if we didn't want to hear it, right, team?
Sure.
Make that an agenda item with their report, like comments from our treasurer. And if he turns this into a show that he publishes or something, we want royalties.
The jumping to page 32 shows performance versus the benchmark. We're just discussing on 1 to 3 year portfolio. So the portfolio return was down 36 basis points as a function of rates increasing over the second quarter. And it outperformed the benchmark. The benchmark was actually down 56 basis points. And again, as I mentioned, the difference in the performance was driven by the corporate spreads tightening through the quarter. And then for the year ending 6/30, overall portfolio performance was 0.54 versus 0.14 for the benchmark.
So if I add on page 32 all the bracketed change in market value of the four or five categories, that tells me how much we lost on an unrealized, in other words, just unrecognized basis, just fair market value. Am I right?
Yes, in each period. So the 1 year number applies for that amount of time. The 3 year period is cumulative over that 3 year period. The 5 year one is cumulative.
So you can't just add them. So if we just said in the last year, for example,
yes,
how much did we lose?
It was $1,096,000.
So $1 million, $1,000,001,
yes,
on a portfolio of how much?
$89 million.
Okay. Because I've got another foundation that lost $20 million. I can't name it. $20 million on an even smaller deal in there. I suggested your name, Bob.
Is that the one with crypto?
Excuse me?
Is that the portfolio with crypto stuff in it?
No, had none of that in it.
That was a fixed income portfolio?
I can't speak any more on it, but we're now looking into it.
You have to work hard to do that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So jumping to the 1 to 5 year portfolio. On page 66 shows a snapshot, and again, this is the smaller portfolio, it's only $2.2 million. Again, you'll see that the duration is very close to the benchmark duration for that portfolio as well. And then page 72 shows the return. Also down for the quarter, again, because of the higher interest rates to be expected, but outperformed the benchmark, which was down by 85 basis points quarter, and down 42 for the year, where the portfolio was down 9 basis points.
Question, just for Ivan. Ivan, do you still present to the board on a like a semi-annual basis or something like that, a quarter?
On a quarterly, we sent the reports to the board.
We used to present to them, but you don't do that?
Not anymore.
Okay. I was just wondering if you've gotten any negative comments or anything from any board.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff when Ben left.
Oh, okay.
It was an annual report.
Right. Okay.
No, I was a pet of Ben's. I saw Ben, by the way, sends his regards to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
We were at a meeting together 2 months ago.
Okay.
He's enjoying retirement in Orlando.
Oh, yeah, we're both on the board of the Bright Star Credit Union.
Oh, okay.
So I see him monthly.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So that was my report. So any questions?
Questions from the group? Excellent job. Great report. Appreciate the information. And I'm glad inflation wasn't caused by the Ukrainian war. I was quite interested to see what was going to be in here. Okay. We thank you. And now, last but not least, financial management.
Good morning. My name is Mara Lugo. I'm with PFM Financial Advisors. Just to kind of address what we do for the district, we assist the treasurer's office in all aspects of debt management. So we advise on financing opportunities, refunding options. We assist the district through the process of all those debt offerings and interact with rating agencies. That's our wheelhouse, a little different than what Richard does, the investment space. So with that, we'll get started with a quick market update, just covering the tactics at muni market on page 4. This is sort of a similar theme as we've had in prior meetings where, you know, rates are a little bit higher than they have been. Cost of borrowing is higher. We are seeing things come down a little bit. From, you know, maybe where they were earlier in the start of the year, but we're definitely still above, you know, the 1 year, 6 month, you know, 10 year averages, as these graphs show.
Who's the primary mover on that? Is there 10 financial organizations, 5, 4, 3?
That determine these graphs?
No, not the graphs. That sit there and say, well, there's a slight softening, or who is the group?
So these graphs on slide 4 are pegged to what's called the AAA MMD index. That's a industry-wide index. I believe there's like 30 issuances in there that they track to come up with these composite curves. PFM Financial Advisors is actually in the process of trying to introduce what's called BVAL. It's Bloomberg's version of AAA MMD, and it's more reliable, it's more data-driven. There's way more issuances that get built into those curves, and it's pegged to the actual live market, so it moves. It's similar to like on-the-run treasuries. They're always moving. That's what BVAL is. The market is still just really married to MMD, spreads to MMD, how bankers and investors look at it. But we do foresee a shift towards BVAL in the next, you know, coming years. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I believe it's 30 issuers that go into AAA MMD.
That's what I was trying to look for. You know, like,
yeah,
everybody talks about the S&P, but it's really 6 companies, whatever it is,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying, that make it move. Got it.
So page 5, I think this just shows the last 3 years, again, it's the same theme. Rates are trending upward. You know, clients all the time ask what we think is going to happen in the future. We don't have a crystal ball, but I know Richard spoke a lot about markets and expectations. So those are what these graphs illustrate, same graphs we kind of always show y'all. And then as we go on to section 2, we're just going to cover the TAN, which we did about last month. Was it September? July. Summer's fallen by. All right, so this year we actually went out for $200 million on the TAN. And the final net interest cost on that was about 3.68%. The table in the middle just sort of shows the bids that came in. I'm sorry, I think say 368, I meant 352. 353. So we got 8 bids back, it was a good result. And that's a bullet maturity. So next year on June 28th, 2024, the district will pay back principal and interest due on the 2023 TAM. And then just to kind of give some historical comparison, on page 8, we show the results from the TAM sales dating back to 2016. You'll notice that we've increased the amount. You know, we went from 125 to 160, and now we're up to 200. JP Morgan has won this for the last 3 years. And then the graph at the bottom just sort of shows where that final net interest cost priced when you compare MMT, a 1 year MMT.
So, Ivan, this is not so much the question there, but this chart made me think of it. Mm-hmm. We have a shrinking Broward number of students, right now?
I don't know the exact number, but there is a reduction, yes.
But yet our cash needs are going up, which is, you know, inflation has something to do with that and things like that on there. Does the finance department ever publish something that then tells you we need 200, you know, versus 125, Ivan? Okay, we need 200, and that's, do they do that kind of analysis?
No, we do the analysis, we do cash flows projections.
So do they ever analyze the cash flow projections tied to the student body?
No, we tie it into expense.
But nobody ever ties it into the student body?
No.
Hey, thank you, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's something when I look at this, and we jumped in 7 years from 1.25 to 200 million, and this is exclusive of that special building and rehab thing, right?
But we also did a referendum for the operating millage, where they improved to 1 mil, and so those additional expenses coming in that also require us to make sure we have enough funding when those receipts come in December.
Timing.
Right.
Thank you. Continue.
You're welcome. The only last comment I really have is that while we do see the net interest cost spiking compared to, you know, other years where we were getting that TAM for as low as 52 basis points, short-term interest rates are up, so the district does have the opportunity to invest at a rate that's obviously going to be higher than the 3.5. So those will offset each other, and that's all we have.
So you got to deliver 5.
Yes, exactly.
To cover her 3.5.
Basically.
Put that in the minutes exactly that way.
Between him and I.
That's right.
Before speed.
We got a haircut.
No. Ivan does what a lot of treasurers do. They go to the investment advisor and say, "Now you heard him. What are you going to do?"
Right,
Ivan. That's
absolutely.
So that covers our presentation for today. If there's anything you guys want us to cover at the next meeting, I'd love to hear and take some notes.
Let's do an Ivan, the world according to Ivan, on this section too. All right.
Sure.
Got that in for the next agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
One question, Ray.
Yep.
Do you anticipate any other financings in the near future? Anything?
No.
COPs or anything?
Not at this moment. But we always have some emergency that happens.
Yes.
So
could be like a short term, like a RAN or TAN, you know, when we do TAN, but.
Yeah, no RAN.
No RAN, okay.
We ran away from the RAN and we moved to the TAN. And in case of emergency, we've always got a TAN. I feel like Abbott and Costello, I swear to God.
You did that so well.
No, we do monitor for refunding opportunities, but of the district's debt outstanding, the next available call date is 2025. So starting next year, we'll really start to look at a current refunding and some of those opportunities.
Are any of the foundations in the country now that are so interested in education, are they doing anything that we could benefit from? And I don't mean $20,000 grants. I'm talking about $1 million grants.
asking again?
Everybody's talking about education. And there's all these mega foundations out there, okay, that are giving grants. And again, I don't mean $20,000 grants. I mean mega million-dollar grants. Who handles that? I know it's not the Treasurer's Department.
We have a grant department that handles that.
The big ones too?
Yeah.
And when they come in on the cash flow stuff, the grants, one of the line items that they anticipate, or do they do it without the grants?
Well, most grants are reimbursable grants. So we have to kind of chill.
You need the cash flow to get it first. Okay. Did you get,
yes.
You good?
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Any other questions for our esteemed guests?
As far as the new administration for the school board, we have, is that in place? I haven't been watching the news or reading. Is that in place, and are there any big plans or any upgrades? CIPs or anything like that, or big expenditures?
I'm not aware of any big or out of the ordinary expenditures at this point. So no, it's still with the same capital improvement plan that listed on the TFP. So no.
Okay. We're now in new business. Any other matters the committee would like to bring forth? Being none, there's no public comments since no one came to the meeting. And the upcoming meeting, September 29th, that is a...
This is the RFP.
And which one's that for?
So this is financial advisory and bond and special tax council.
So the financial advisory is going to be here on September 29th? Did you know that?
Did I? Yes.
You knew that?
Yes. Okay.
I didn't know if she kind of slipped that in on you.
No, I'm just putting it in my personal calendar.
Oh, okay. All right. How
it's
many people...
It's Friday on there, Mara.
No, it's on a board calendar. I was putting it in my personal calendar. It was not important.
Okay.
How many people do we think are going to be presenting?
The purchasing agent has not told us yet.
It's here.
It's here.
All these meetings are here. September 29th is right around the corner.
Correct.
I'd like to know from the purchasing agent to the committee, not just to Ray, to the committee, how many there are by September 15th, if that's doable.
It's open until the 22nd.
Whoa. So it's open till the 22nd, but we're meeting the 29th.
Correct.
To meet their timeline.
To evaluate, the proposals.
To make the appropriate board meeting to do the routine. Okay.
It's a tight timeline.
So we want the 23rd, the list.
Okay.
Right, group?
Yes. All reading material.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And reading material ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially, on that.
But it's kind of showing also because the board wants to have these items earlier, so they have time to review when they meet, and so things are just getting shorter and shorter.
But they seem to be getting shorter and shorter from the board, which I agree they should, to us. Is purchasing gotten shrunk? You can't say anything, so don't respond. Yeah, I understand my point.
It's another issue.
They seem to have the same timeline they had when I was a junior in high school. So in any event, but you know how to instruct them.
It's
right?
Important, yeah.
You're
okay.
Very efficient as a government.
That's like I don't have heartburn; it just hurts. Okay. With that. Since Robert's great-grandson said I don't need to take a vote, I'm adjourning this meeting, and God bless you all. Safe travels for everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.